It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney.
The sportos, the motorheads, geeks, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Right now on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.
He is indeed a righteous dude. He is the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, with us here today to review the Final Four as KU falls to Villanova in the national semifinals. Brian, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Wade. How are you?
I'm recovering from the trip to San Antonio. Had a fantastic time, and it's a terrific venue to host the Final Four. Have you recovered from the fun activities this past weekend?
Yeah, you know, there wasn't much time to recover and dwell, you know, too much and all that, because we transitioned pretty fast into baseball up here. So been getting set for number 5, Texas Tech, rolling in this afternoon at 1 o'clock. But honestly, I kind of made my peace with the loss. Somebody asked me, you know, when were you finally over it? And I said, to be honest, about the 10-minute mark of the second half.
Yeah.
I'd already made my peace with it. Yeah. And that's not to say that, you know, oh, man, I had it written off and I was already coping and all that. But, you know, we talked last week about how regardless of what was about to unfold, just for this particular team to make the Final Four, when really, I think if you listed them all off, the 15 teams that Bill Self has had, and you looked at the quality and quantity of talent, 1 through 9, on the squad, this would probably be his 9th or 10th best team. You know, that there's certain aspects of this team that are the very best. That they had 2 of the top 4 three-point shooters in Kansas history on this team and set the KU record for 3. They had the guy that Bill Self said is the best leader he's ever coached at Kansas, has the best intangibles he's ever seen in Devontae Graham. Clearly, those are things that other teams did not have. And yet, like I said, if you ranked it off 1 through 9, this is not even close to his best team. It's not even close to his top 3 best teams, and yet it was the 3rd team of Self's at Kansas that goes to a Final Four. And so that's the nature of this tournament. You know, you don't always produce the best team making it to the finals. And this year it did. And I think that also helps fans and me cope with the fact that, well, we did get beat, and we got beat bad, but we got beat by a team that beat everybody bad. We got beat by a team that won by double figures in all 6 games and was truly the best team in the dance. Not always do you get that. You did this year, and I think that helped a little bit as well. But even though I still had hope with 10 minutes to go in the second half, don't get me wrong, I mean, with 5 minutes to go, we hit a 3, and I'm like, the Hawks aren't dead yet. You know, I'm still thinking that, but it was never truly a game. No. In which Kansas had any type of more than an arm's distance chance, because after they go down and score 2-0, it's from there a 22-2 run, and typically you have that Kansas counterpunch.
Yeah.
We never did. We had a 7-0 run. Jay Wright takes a timeout to hit 3 threes, and it's open. And so I think I started dealing with it and compartmentalizing it and all that, you know, once I saw that Villanova wasn't backing down and that we were witnessing history to have the Final Four 3-point record broken at halftime. And I think, you know, from there you just start to count your blessings and realize what this was a really good team that made a really great run and is going to hang a banner. And at Kansas, we don't hang banners for Sweet 16s or Elite 8s. We hang them for the big stuff. And this was big stuff. So let's rejoice and be glad in it. But at the same time, you know, not carry too much disappointment over the way the Saturday game in San Antonio went, because I think for this particular season, just getting there meant you were playing with house money anyway.
Yeah, you know, Saturday when we were down there, we had a blast and everything. We timed everything perfectly, the pep rally and the Riverwalk. We got to be on ESPN game day. We went into a place where we didn't have to wait to eat. Everything was going perfectly. Went to the pregame, the pep rally, the pregame party or whatever at KU had. Then we roll into the stadium, perfect time, plenty of time to check things out. And it was like, okay, we need the little icing on the cake if KU would win. And KU falls behind 22-4, and they lose the ball game. And honestly, I wasn't all torn up about it because it was a great day. It was a great experience to be at the Final Four. You know, if you would have said KU makes Final Four a couple months ago, people would have said, you're nuts. And they went up against a team they didn't match up very well against. But the one disappointing thing, the only disappointing thing I take out of it, is that I was waiting for Kansas to have, as you mentioned, one of those runs where they would at least get it to single digits and you start to have some hope. I think if Villanova would add the 22-4 run to start the second half, or at the 10-minute mark of the first half, It's, you know, like Michigan the other day against Villanova in the championship. 21-14, and then Villanova went nuts, I think 27-7 run, and they go ahead to pull away and they win. That would have been just at least a little bit different, because the KU fans really, including ourselves, never were able to get into this game because you're buried at the very beginning.
Yeah, that's totally fair. It's kind of funny. You talk about the fans being able to get into it. Somebody asked me, well, how did it feel to call your first Final Four game? And I said to him, you know, it honestly didn't feel like I called a Final Four game. And it's not to say that, you know, we didn't show up or whatever. I'm not saying that at all. It's just, you know, as a play-by-play guy, too, that there's certain competitive juices when a game is going back and forth and you've got some semblance of a chance. That's when, as a play-by-play guy, you get engaged and you're fired up and you're on the edge of your seat and you're digging deep for your best calls and all that. We truly never had that. I know I showed up and I sat in the first row. I had the best seat of my life, and I know that I saw Grant Hill to my right and Jim Nance to my left, and I was in the seating of 72,000 there at the Alamo Dome. But in terms of actually calling a Final Four game, it just didn't feel like that game ever broke out, because it was kind of like a heavyweight fight where, man, you get a roundhouse to the jaw 10 seconds in, and it's a knockout, and from, you know, it's like, oh, man. Sorry, somebody's at my door, obviously. from there, you're like, man, you know, can we get back up from this? And the answer was no, we never could. And that's so atypical of Kansas, who always seemingly has a run. But this particular team only had a 7-0 run at that point, and that was all they could do.
Yeah, it was a tough way to start the game, as you said. But, you know, we go back to 2008. Kansas jumped on North Carolina 40-12. So, you know, sometimes things come around, they go around. You hear the word karma, whether you believe it or not. But Kansas has been on the other side of that in the Final Four. And although North Carolina made a run in that game, whereas KU just really didn't. But Villanova, as you mentioned, they rolled through this tournament. They beat three Big 12 teams to end at West Virginia, Texas Tech, Kansas before the final, where they beat Michigan. I don't really want to harbor too much on the game, other than I think you and I both talked about it. One of the big concerns we had going into that game was how you're going to match up with Spellman. He's the guy that scared me going in. That and Villanova had only made four threes against Tech. You just knew they were going to shoot the ball better against Kansas just because of the law of averages. But Udoka, you know, he was a liability on the floor, and I think that was a concern going in, is because people talked about matching up with Udoka, but my thought was, well, how are you going to match up with the five for Villanova, which is Spellman? And that Spellman kid, let me tell you something, he's just getting better and better. He's a beast.
Yeah, he was obviously special, and anytime you got a guy that shoots 45% and has that type of versatility, not just in hitting from there, but getting out to the three-point line and getting back in so athletically, we knew that was going to be a challenge. And it was interesting. Bill Self, unsolicited in the pregame, says to me, hey, Kansas fans are going to be mad at Doak because they're going to think he's not getting all the way out on him. And he's like, here's the deal. If he hits a couple of threes, big deal. That means he's not inside to get the rebound, and we'll take our chances with that. Well, to be honest, he only hit three threes. It's not like he went nuts.
Yeah.
He was 3 of 9. But it was very evident that Doak was having a hard time, you know, staying close enough to him while also getting back to get the rebounds. And that's, you know, if anything, something that Doak, you know, needs to show he can do more of if he's going to play at the next level, and one of several reasons why I think it would behoove Doak to come back. Think about it. Anybody Doak's going to guard in the NBA next year or the year after is going to have an 18-foot jump shot. Yep. And so, you know, showing the ability to cover more ground, slide his feet, get back into the rebound is something that he can definitely work on. But beyond that, you knew Spellman could be a thorn in your side. I'll be honest, I didn't see what Pascal did coming at all. I don't think anybody did.
No.
You know, that's the guy that statistically you take your chances with, right?
That's right.
Because even though you know he can hit from three, he was 33%. So he was the lesser of five evils. And when he comes out and rattles in his first one and really gets them going, because I think it was the first one of the game, they're thinking, oh, man, well, if he's going to hit, look out. This might not be our night. He ends up hitting 4 of 5 from three. He ends up going 10 of 11 from the floor.
Yeah.
He's a good player, but he looked like the most outstanding player on that night, and that was the one guy that you couldn't account for. Because here's the thing, as much as we'd like to say, hey, we'll just match up with all five guys, we'll take all five guys away because we're Kansas, we're that good. Now, you can't do that against Nova. I mean, their dribble penetration and penetrating pitch is too effective. Their ball reversals are too quick. They know where they're going two passes ahead. And so you can't just say, all right, well, we're going to take everybody away because we're going to be able to stop ball, stay in front of our man, and be fine. Eventually, they're going to break you down. The help defense is going to have to slide over, and somebody's going to be finding themselves wide open. Well, honestly, on paper, you take it if Pascal was that guy. Now, not wide, wide open, but you take your chances because statistically, he's the lesser of five evils. Well, on this night, he had his best night. And I think this happened, Wade. I think you probably agree. Once a few threes started going in, they started feeling so loose and so free. They bring in Gillespie off the bench, little guy, and he just chucks one up 8 seconds after entering the game. Yep. Boom, it goes down. And it was just one of those things where one builds off another for them, and it really snowballed. And I think on the other end, you know, Kansas is trading twos for threes, and psychologically they know that the deficit's growing, even though we're scoring here. What was surprising to me was that they were so committed. My dog's fired up about the loss, too. they were so committed to getting the ball inside Doak that they didn't take a three-pointer until nearly the seven-minute mark of the first half, and they hit it. But, you know, this is the Kansas team that, while, they're 63 shy of what Nova did this year, they were still the KU record-setting three-point shooting team, and yet they never got into that. Obviously, Spee never had the type of separation that would allow him to get going. Not that he needs a ton of separation, but I just felt like he was a little hesitant. He was covered up for much of the night and never really got in the groove. And that was a guy that was, you know, as clutch as any down the stretch other than Malik Newman in Omaha. So it's just a kind of perfect storm, everything going right for them and snowballing in a positive way for them, and everything going wrong for Kansas and snowballing in the opposite direction for KU. But like I said, just to see them get there was great. To see Devontae, you know, perform well in his final game, because otherwise, I think we remember his tournament as kind of a frustrating shooting tournament in which other guys, you know, zoomed past him as a catalyst. And I thought, in the face of that adversity, he really stood up and took and hit some big shots and you know, showed himself very well. And obviously, the emotional exchange between him and Bill Self comes off the floor for the last time. You always hate to see it end in tears like that, but at the same time, when it's on that stage, and literally on a stage where he has to step down three steps off of it to get down to the bench because you're playing on the biggest of stages and you're actually exalted up in the air, I think you're okay with those tears, because there's no shame and no reason to hold your head when you just did something that only 14 Kansas teams before you were able to do in the illustrious history of this program. And while he wasn't the biggest reason why it happened these last 3 weeks, he was certainly the biggest reason why, you know, they were in position to do it over the course of the year. And so, tip of the cap to a great guy, a great senior that will be sorely missed. I know Bill Self feels like we're going to be more talented next year, but the intangibles you lose from a leadership and experience standpoint, you're just not going to be able to replace. And so, that to me is the biggest concern for next season, is how do you replace a fourth-year, 23-year-old All-American point guard? How do you replace a fourth-year shooting guard that was number four in career threes and had been through the wars and all that? They're going to look as deep as any team in America in the post if Udoka comes back and you bring in 2 5-star guys off the bench, Silvio and McCormick, because I'm here to tell you, Dedrick Lawson, he's not only going to be Big 12 newcomer of the preseason, I think he's going to be Big 12 player of the year of the postseason. I think he's that good. And so, is exciting what it might look like if Dedrick has Udoka next to him and Kansas suddenly is the biggest team in the country. But losing those veteran guards, what effect will that have in terms of that steadying hand at the wheel? Right. Maybe not as much as we think, but certainly it's going to look way different. You're not going to be talking about 391 threes and an average of 10 a game. You're going to be talking about maybe 6 threes a game and throwing it up to the big fellas numerous times, playing inside out, all that. I worry a little bit in the quest for 15 straight and in the hopes of getting to Minneapolis for the Final Four that leaders are going to have to emerge from younger guys in that backcourt, because what you've had the last couple of years were so spoiled. I mean, Frank Mason, a senior leader, Devontae Graham, a senior leader, you're not going to have that in the backcourt next season. And to me, that and the lack of a terrific three-point shooter are the two glaring omissions from next year's roster as we look at it today.
Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. You mentioned Villanova's defense against KU. You know, a lot of people are talking about, well, KU's defense wasn't good on the three-point line. Villanova's defense was really good against KU on the three-point line. And then you mentioned different guys stepping up for Villanova. You mentioned Pascal against KU. And then, of course, DiVincenzo with 31 points off the bench in the championship game. So they deserved it. They were clearly the most complete team in the country this year. And so now you move forward, and you mentioned that KU is going to be more of a Bill Self-like type of team with two posts next year if Udoka comes back. Even if he doesn't, they can still go two posts. But I do wonder, we saw KU go up against two really talented post players in Duke, and the four guards beat the two posts. And that's what we seem to be seeing, more of a small ball four guard. We saw Villanova, five guys stretching the floor to score. So you do wonder, is that going to be the right thing for Kansas next year against the rest of the field, or is it just a matter of who they run up against into the NCAA tournament next year? If they've got the size advantage, but if it gets to be up and down, it's hard to guard guys that can shoot from every spot on the floor. I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic going into next year, don't you?
It is, and I think to your question about Duke, if they would have forced the issue, backing it down more and taking closer to the basket looks, and then been in position for more of their typical offensive rebound stick back tries,
yeah,
their strategy of having two bigs would work just fine. I mean, they averaged on the season scoring off of 40% of their misses. Think about that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That means not only are you getting the offensive rebound, you're scoring on it. And so versus Kansas, for whatever reason, they were more content to have Bagley be 14, 15 feet away. Maybe Kansas was forcing him into deeper catches, but they didn't camp out down low. And obviously the foul trouble on Wendell Carter had a lot to do with that, because that would have been the optimal lineup with him and Bagley side by side. But I reference all that to say that they weren't in position to really take advantage of their size based on the spacing on the floor, and a lot of KU's rebounds came long off long, chucked up and missed bricks by Duke's guards. I think Kansas, if they play to their size next year, it's fine. I mean, yes, there's a trend going toward more stretch fours and running the floor and all that, but I, for one, am a proponent of, man, you go where the talent's at, and in this case, in this particular talent cycle for the 2018-2019 season, it just so happens you may wind up with four five-star bigs on your roster. So you adjust, and you construct it based on that. That doesn't mean you're going to slow it down and play in the 60s all of a sudden. They're still going to get out and push it.
Sure.
A lot of these guys can run the floor. But if somebody asked me, does there need to be a fundamental change toward how Bill Self recruits and how you construct your team based on how Villanova just beats you, at, you know, a five that can shoot 45% threes and all that. And you know, you could say that, but the person was inferring, you know, do we not want a Udoka as a Buki type guy that can't get all the way out and guard and all that? Here's the thing. You need Udoka in a lot of the games.
Yes.
Where, you know, over the first 38 games, it's such a mismatch that he's the reason why you win.
Yeah.
Now, it may not be an ideal matchup in that 39th game versus Villanova, but you need him over the long haul. And most Kansas teams are deep enough, this one wasn't, where if you get to a certain point where the matchup doesn't play right, well, you've got another piece on the bench that does things differently that you could swap in and lean on Doak less. This Kansas team never had that luxury, which is why it was such a masterful coaching job by Bill Self to get as far as they did. Quite frankly, you know who would have been great in that matchup, Wade? Billy Preston.
Yeah.
6'10", 245, yeah. Super athletic. He was in San Antonio. He was sitting behind the bench, but he wasn't on the floor. Like, Bill Self had a piece in his, you know, toolkit at the start of the year,
yeah,
that could have gotten out to guard Solomon. So I think that they're recruiting just fine. I think you still take the 7'10", 280-pound center and a couple of them if you can get them, because they don't grow on trees. Nobody else has them. And over the course of a five-month season, there will be games you win specifically because of that. So I'm not somebody that thinks based on one game, you got to throw out the baby in the bathwater and say, this is solely how we have to start recruiting, and we got to devise an offense to hang with this style. Hey, man, it was a great offense you ran up against at Villanova, but let's call it like it is. KU truly caught them on their very, very best. You talk about how over the course of 162 games in a Major League Baseball season, a pitcher that makes 40 starts might have five starts where he has his ace-level stuff, five starts where he doesn't have good command, and then 30 where it's just kind of in between.
Yeah.
Well, KU caught Nova on truly their ace-level stuff, best start of the day, and it worked to perfection, to the point of 18 threes. The game before, they hit 424 versus Texas Tech, and a lot of that was what Tech did defensively, but wouldn't you have liked to have caught him on that night?
Yeah.
I say all of that to tell you that I think Kansas is, you know, current philosophy is just fine, and you know, next year's a rare year. We're going to wind up with more bigs than guards of the real five-star ilk. So, man, play to your strengths, and there's no coach I know that's better at doing that I've been around than Bill Self. And so I'm excited to see what it's going to look like, and I think Kansas fans that have fallen in love with the three the last couple of years, particularly this one, you know, you're not going to see as many, but it's still going to be exciting and fun, and instead of 393 threes, you may see 500 dunks. And won't that be great?
Yeah, that'd be fine, too.
Let's look forward to that.
Yeah. I know we're short on time. One final question before we get off to the wall real quick. Malik Newman is going pro. Devontae Graham, Sfee, of course, can go pro. They're seniors. Malik signed an agent, declared. There's talk Udoka may go. He may stay. You mentioned that earlier. LeGerald Vick, there's talk he may go pro, whether he goes overseas or whatever, or come back to Kansas. Can you roll through those real quick in regards to what the thinking is by the pros as to where they might be projected in the draft, and then your quick thoughts on Vick? And I think you already addressed Udoka.
Yeah, you know, I think that the best way to answer that is to quote Bill Self. And what he told me on our TV show this week is that Kansas fans should expect that four of the five starters are gone. And whether LeGerald or Udoka is the one that comes back, you know, you're probably going to lose two of the guys that aren't seniors. And one of them's already declared since then, in Malik. And, you know, realistically, I think it's probably going to be a situation where Vic has to go D-League because I don't see him as one of the top 60 picks, and yet I think that, you know, in his mind he's weighing heavily leaving because he's kind of ready to pursue his pro dreams and start making money and all that. It used to be as simple as, well, if you're going to get drafted in the first round, you go. If you're not, it's not guaranteed money, so you stay and try to enhance your stock. But these guys now, they see the Wayne Seldons of the world that play their way up in the league through the D League, and they think, "Hey, that could be me, and I'm ready. I need to get some earning potential started now, so let's go." And I think that's you know, what could be at play with Malik and LeGerald, because Malik caught like it is in the regular season. He was a 12-point per game type scorer, and you can find him on any mock draft, yeah, first or second round. Now he's played his way into that based on a terrific postseason, which so often is the case in the NCAA tournament. You can catapult yourself so much. But is he a first-round pick? Probably not. Maybe. I mean, it depends how the combine goes, right?
Right.
But there's a lot of guys that do what he does and have been doing it at the NBA level for a while that, you know, you plug him in and, you know, he'd blend in but maybe not stand out at all. And so I think Malik's got a great chance to be an early second-type guy unless he has a really great combine and just tearing it up, and then maybe plays his way into the back end of the first. I've seen mocks that have both Devontae and Sfee creeping into the late first, and I've seen others that have them hanging on to the bottom rung of the ladder in the second round.
Yeah.
So it's a crapshoot at this point, but all three of those guys, Sfee, Devontae, and Malik, will get drafted. I'd be surprised at this juncture if LeGerald does, because it's such a deep draft, but he's the best athlete of those three and four, if you include him in the mix. So maybe that says one team. It only takes one team. You know, yeah, values him more so than we're looking at it. The guy that we care the most about in this, because he can help us the most next year, he can help himself the most next year, he has the most to gain by coming back another year. Because, hey, if Vic comes back, he's not going to catapult himself into a lottery pick.
Yeah.
He's just not. I mean, there's too many other, you know, premier options in terms of measurables. Udoka could go from a late first rounder to a top 10 pick if he has a huge year and polishes out some of the rough edges. So, to me, Udoka is the guy that benefits the most to come back. I think he knows that. He may still test the waters and see what's out there and what grades he gets back. But, you know, it's a process at the combine when they ask you to shoot from 15 and 20 feet. And those aren't things in his bag of tricks right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that he needs to go through that and have to endure, you know, taking 20 shots from the mid-range when he doesn't have range outside of 3 or 4 right now with those running hooks. And so come back. Prove you can be a more consistent rebounder. Come back. Prove you can be a shot blocker and alterer on a different level than what we've seen. We've seen glimpses, but show it sustained over 5 months. Come back and raise 41% from the free throw line to 56 and show that it's not a liability there. Come back and dominate. Be the poster boy on the front of the magazine. I think Dietrich will be there with him, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
I think you do that, and you raise your draft position by 20 places. You do that, you raise your earning potential exponentially. Yeah. And so, to me, I'm excited about what it could be for Doak if he elects to come back, and hopefully he's got good advisors telling him those things. Bill Self will tell you he'll never tell the kid, hey, you got to stay. I'm trying to hold you back for selfish reasons. He wants to do what's best for the kid, but this is truly an example where he can tell the kid, who is a kid, 18 years old, I really think you could just springboard yourself into much more fruitful territory with one more really productive year. And so I think that's the hope all of us have. We'll see if it pays off and pans out that way. But that, to me, makes the most sense. And I think if I'm, you know, betting one way or the other, while it might be close to 50-50 on Doak, I think it's, as we talk today, more likely he returns than he leaves, but it's not by very much. It might be 55-45.
All right, Timber, off-the-wall question before we let you go. Best thing about the Final Four is?
I think it's Final Four Friday when all four teams are still alive, all four fan bases are drunk on enthusiasm, optimism, and maybe a little bit of adult beverage, and everybody's just out there amongst each other, you know, excited to be at one big party, one amazing showcase of the sport and the tournament that we love so much. That feel, whether it's on Bourbon Street in New Orleans or on the Mineral Rock in San Antonio or wherever the game's being played, where everybody's still in it, everybody's out celebrating, and you've got all this hope and possibility and promise coming the next day, that's so much fun. And that's why San Antonio and New Orleans are my favorite two places, because I think they have the best venues to host that. And I'm not talking about stadiums. I'm talking about the downtown amenities for fans around the stadium. And so it's a shame we couldn't enjoy it for the full weekend. And man, it was a ton of fun in the days leading up. And I think they got a great shot to be in Minneapolis next year. So pack that winter coat and be prepared to use it in the month of April, because we might be heading north this time next year.
Well, it was a great run for the Jayhawks. Brian, thanks for the time. We'll talk again soon, buddy.
Thanks, Wade. Have a great day.
You too. That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every week by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.